Bullying insights in pop culture, Harry Potter to Mean Girls. I remember the raw, sinking feeling of being targeted. Being bullied ends up being a lifelong journey. I felt the sting of classroom taunts, the subtle relationship manipulations, and the lingering bitterness of reunions. These experiences are deeply personal and painful. Stories helped me frame what was happening to me and what I did in return. They weren't always perfect, but in an imperfect world, the bullied will take any help they get. Bullying is complicated. What it does to us, even more so. Childhood bullying, the darkness of pad foot and prongs. When I was in the second standard, I shared a desk and a bench with a classmate. I was 6 and scrawny, he was 7, and to me he seemed burly. But this boy wasn't just any classmate. He had a vivid imagination. He'd tell me that his bodyguards were skeletons hiding behind our desk. He said he would command them to come and kill me at night. I remember feeling absolute terror, the complete helplessness that only a child knows. In my young mind, it became absolute that bad things would happen on the whim of people more powerful than myself. All I could do was beg and grovel. I went home in tears one day after hours of threats. Some days later, a teacher came to my classroom and had a brief word with my class teacher. Someone told me that she was his mother. As she left, she turned and said, "Sorry." That's all I remember. But the damage was done and the fear had already taken root. I had joined the shadows of the bullied. In Snape's worst memory from Harry Potter and the Half-Blood Prince, the bullying of Severus Snape is both cruel and personal. At around age 15, Sirius and James mercilessly humiliate Snape, targeting his insecurities. James Potter mocks Snape's appearance and social status, while Sirius Black joins in, further intensifying the humiliation. They don't just belittle him with words, they physically humiliate him, and the chapter ends with the implication that the assault went on worse and longer. It was a difficult chapter to read, but on balance, it feels like too little. I'll explain later in this post. At least I had Anu to talk to about everything that came up in my most recent reading. We talk about childhood fears, about buried traumas. We often hear about incidents of bullying from the outside, the wounds on boys' bodies inflicted by other boys. But we rarely get to see what happens within a person in a situation like this. The attached bully, Dudley's affections. We meet Harry Potter's Severus Snape as a formidable teacher, one who seems cruel and even bullying of some of his students. This chapter gives us an insight into the boy before he grew up into a man. The classmate who terrorized me wasn't just a bully. He was a child dealing with his own fears and insecurities, projecting them onto me because I was an easy target. I'd heard a rumor that his father used to beat up his mother. That was a child growing up in an abusive home. Years later, when we were both in our final year, the school organized a special picnic for us because we had been working hard. The coordinator held up a list proposing to read out the attendees. One of the students asked why we are all going to be there. She said, "No, not everyone," and gave me a look. I was the only one who had not registered. I hadn't intended for it to be quite so noticeable. In the split second of silence, as the class swiveled around to look at me, a voice broke out furious and forceful. "What? You're not going?" I braced myself as I always did when I heard his voice. But I was unprepared for his next sentence. "Why are you not going? If you're not going, I'm not going either." I really did not understand that at all. I didn't realize then that his bullying had been less about me and more about him. About his need to control something in a small world. Psychological insights suggest that bullies often develop an emotional attachment to their victims, a twisted need to dominate and define their identity through their power over another person. Another Potterverse bully, Dudley Dursley, starts off mean, selfish, and physically intimidating. But by the end of the series, there is a moment of recognition, a sad acknowledgement that he will never see Harry again. It is a very strange thing to think that your bully cares about your existence, even if only to torment you. Bullying in relationships, Regina George and the Burn Book. This dynamic would play out in many of my adult relationships, aided liberally by the violence embedded in males by patriarchy. The only way Indian men are taught to show attachment to a woman is through aggression, even assault. I had a partner who would frequently mock my taste in movies or music, calling them typical white boy shit. I once told him in despair that I knew he saw me as stupid, but a lot of people thought I was quite smart. He seemed taken aback at that and said he was just joking. But he just wouldn't stop. Condescension is funny, he said. Another time he called me high maintenance in front of my friends. When I protested, he laughed and said, "Of course you are." He wouldn't stop jeering as my cheeks got hotter and my voice rose in pitch. My friends just seemed to be laughing along and agreeing with him. Face burning, I stood up and walked away from the table. I still couldn't bring myself to ask, "What about my life do you pay for? I pay my share in everything, and I got the tickets for this trip. In what way do you maintain me?" Humiliating him was a boundary I could not cross even in self-defense. But he had no such qualms, and my friends felt no compulsion enabling him. Later they said awkwardly, "He's your boyfriend, we were just having a little fun." There may be many reasons that I've chosen the kind of partners that I have. This behavior has been consistent. They display hostility towards the other people in my life. They make me feel grateful for the slightest bit of conviviality, even when I'm not included in it, even when it includes mean jokes, even when those jokes are not really funny, even when it's deliberately aimed at decimating me. Mean Girls Regina George wields the skill like a weapon. Physical intimidation and obvious threats are for kids and amateurs. Psychological manipulation takes on diabolic proportions, as we see in the Burn Book and in the film Gaslight, which gave its name to the term gaslighting. I predicted this in my 20s, that the women of my generation would continue growing and that the men would fall short when their support systems of family and society withered. What I didn't anticipate is that their gender would come back with the diabolical vengeance of bullying. I see it in most relationships around me, that brittle tension that is like guns trained at targets, in waiting. Revisiting the past, when bullying festers, carry happens. In my 30s, I reconnected with old classmates over WhatsApp. What began as a nostalgic trip down memory lane soon turned sour when one of them called me monkey face. It's Regina George and Carrie's classmates all over again. Body shaming and exclusion for control. Pick a target, any target. Give the mob someone to aim at and they will follow. The only way to make them stop bullying is to bully them back. I thought it. I'm a writer. If words are my tools, they can be my weapons as well. Adult me has an understanding of casteism and colorism as well as the confidence of the now conventionally attractive. But I don't want to be Carrie exploding over everyone or KD destroying the very social fabric of school in decimating the plastics. It is exhausting. Will the bully wars never end? We've all been adults for decades now. The same people who had been hospitable in person didn't recognize the problem in inflicting wounds with old knives. The most shocking incident came later. I rejoined the school WhatsApp group so I could attend a condolence meet for a classmate's father. The next morning, amid the good morning inanities and school time banalities, was a porn image laid over with a rape joke. I pinged the sender, the administrator, telling him why it was upsetting. He was rude and worse, condescending. I could have reported it since pornography is illegal to distribute in India. I could have gotten them all into some uncomfortable times circling the Mumbai cops, the cyber cell and WhatsApp. Instead, I called it out on the group in an impersonal message. Unsurprisingly, the group reacted not with apology or agreement, but ridicule, all because I had called it out. Several people were furious at me for speaking up. Some called me names, one issued a rape threat, another made nasty comments about the white sari that I wore to the funeral. Nobody apologized to me. The very idea that the offender, let alone the others, should apologize to me filled them with rage. It was a stark reminder that bullying doesn't disappear. It just finds new avenues. There's something deep and rotten when bullying happens. It needs to be weeded out, understood, and resolved completely for any chance of normalcy. I naively imagined that the years would lay this dynamic to rest, that we, as the adults we had become, could now form new friendships. I was wrong. Nobody walks away unscathed. Lupin, the enabler. This experience was eerily similar to the fawning responses described in psychological studies, where some people align with the aggressor to protect themselves, echoing and amplifying the harm done to the target. In my case, the group's collective response was to isolate me rather than confront the real issue. It's a pattern that is all too common in both real life and fiction. When faced with a bully, it's easier to side with them than stand up and take a risk becoming a target yourself. In Snape's worst memory, Remus Lupin plays a passive role in this dynamic. Although he is not as active in the bullying, his silence enables Sirius and James's behavior. Lupin later becomes deeply grateful to Snape for keeping his secret and brewing him a healing potion regularly. This complex relationship highlights how passive enabling can contribute to the cycle of bullying. One person stood up for me in this incident. It surprised me. We hadn't been close in school. She was close friends with my childhood bully. But it's likely she thought as I did, an adult dynamic for adults. And she made an adult decision. It brought up other complexities. The school bully called her cross-continent, demanding to know why she was supporting me. She sounded disappointed when she told me this. Maybe there was hurt in that disappointment. After all, it is hard to see the flaws in a close friend. Harder when they hold up a mirror to your own enabling. I asked her to forgive him, but maybe that is not my place to suggest. Their friendship should have had nothing to do with me. Yet, it seems like forgiving him must start with me. It's a heavy burden to carry. The shared trauma of bullying, unhealed rage. Apparently, my bully had once told her that I had complained about him to the teacher, which led to his punishment for a year by his father. He claimed he could never forgive me for that and even went so far to say that if I were being assaulted right in front of him, he won't lift a finger to help. His disproportionate rage all these years later was more baffling than alarming to me. Deeply unresolved issues linger and flare up with such intensity even decades later. It gives me no pleasure to say that my childhood bully is still attached to me, wishing me harm and other things when all I wish is that he would just forget about me. Perhaps he can't any more than I can forget him. Bullying inextricably writes us into each other's lifelong stories in the form of shared trauma. The only difference is he inflicted it and I endured it. He's the only one who can heal the situation. I can only heal or protect myself. Coping mechanisms as personality. Lovely Luna. Luna Lovegood in Harry Potter offers a unique perspective on bullying by embodying resilience and authenticity in the face of cruelty. Ostracized and mocked for her eccentricity, Luna is often subjected to harassment from her peers. However, her unwavering self-confidence and kindness challenge the bullying she endures. I always loved this character, from her more impersonal, rational form in the books, right to her more whimsical, manic pixie avatar in the movies. The scene in the book where she's looking for her shoes and say that people often hide them broke my heart. The movie played it with more serenity as she adds that they'll soon show up. They usually do. Luna is the sole redeeming factor in favor of J.K. Rowling in my mind. She offered me a template to understand my own coping mechanisms in the universes of bullying that I was navigating. As a teenager, I learned not to show my reactions. At the time, I thought of it as, I won't give you the satisfaction. The only kind of FU I could safely express. It became ingrained in my personality. I did so successfully to the point that I had trouble accepting my mental illness even when I was suicidal. It took a massive panic attack for me to see it, the brain equivalent of big flashing letters in the sky. The past year of reflections have made me realize that my coping mechanisms seem to make my traumas invisible. People have trouble believing that anyone could take me down or that I get hurt. I've also enabled the enablers of bullies by allowing them to believe that bullying never really happened. We never really think of Luna when we think of bullying in Harry Potter, do we? Who we call victim? Snape's journey. The stories we tell about bullies and their victims are more than just entertainment. They are reflections of our deepest fears and insecurities. They show us the complexity of these relationships, the ways in which power and fear intertwine, and how difficult it can be to break free from these dynamics. The dynamic between James Potter, Sirius Black, and Severus Snape is even more complex than the straightforward harassment of Dudley Dursley towards Harry Potter. Now the bullies are the good guys, the ones we are supposed to root for. James and Sirius, both Gryffindors, are charming, talented, and brave, qualities we associate with heroes. Yet, their bullying of Snape is relentless and brutal. It's worse when you consider that both James and Sirius come from wealthy, loving families, and Snape does not. Snape, greasy-haired and brooding, is set up as the antagonist. But the deeper we dive into the story, the more we realize how much of his bitterness stems from the bullying he endured. If James and Sirius's actions were just youthful follies, might that not be true of Snape's early days as a Death Eater? A desperate bid to shelter with those that might protect him and offer him more dignity than he ever received. He's the only one of his generation who actually learns and turns. That makes him the hero of a journey through bullying hell. This narrative forces us to confront our own biases. Why do we empathize with some victims but not others? Why do we forgive some bullies but condemn others? The stories we tell ourselves shape our understanding of these dynamics, often simplifying the complex web of emotions that underlie bullying.